With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Crazy. Look at this. If you win this mail-in contest, you can choose between $90,000 or 90,000 donuts.
A leisurely cross-country trip.
The hell?
What did you do?
Hang on, I can't steer.
An unexpected breakdown.
Can you believe this?
A helpful passerby.
Folks, all right?
Our car broke down.
I can give you a ride to Bell's, a little diner about 5 miles down the road. They got a payphone. You call a tow truck, they just come in and haul you out.
It could happen to anyone.
Excuse me. I was supposed to meet my wife here. She's dark haired, about 5'5".
Doesn't ring a bell.
Welcome to Rewatchability. We're a podcast on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is...
Blaine Waters.
And...
J.M. McNabb.
You guys are no fun. I would have had, like, a cool CB hand.
Man, we leave
like...
that to you. We leave it to you. We don't want to steal
well,
your thing.
Well, when I'm doing this job, you guys should pick up the weight, you know, the slack. Come on.
CB is not a huge part of this movie.
Well, no, I know, but... I mean, it resonated with me. I'll talk about why. But
if we had done Joyride, which is another vengeful trucker movie,
yeah.
That has more CB radio stuff.
That's true. There is an entire genre of vengeful trucker movies, of which we are talking about perhaps the best and the original one. Well, not the original one, because there are some really old ones. But the most original of the 90s, for sure.
Yeah,
sure.
But before we get into that, we should first of all thank our Patreons. Those are the folks who give us a little bit of money each month. And in return, we give them the podcast early and ad-free. No commercialism, none of that. It's just pure podcast, baby. And
right into your pods.
Ew.
Maybe a little bit too much podcast. But if you want to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/rewatchability and donate a little bit of money. Doesn't have to be a lot, $1, $3, or $5. And sometimes we give you some bonus episodes, lots of great stuff. Well, really just the bonus episodes.
And we'll definitely give you your loved ones back.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, I mean, as long as you pay up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. $90,000. That's the loved ones tier on our Patreon.
Don't just try to give us $5,000 bills. We will see right through
damn
that
right.
Shit.
Yeah. But if you haven't guessed, we are talking about the movie Breakdown from 1997, directed and written by Jonathan Mostow, starring Kurt Russell and also J.T. Walsh. And I didn't write down who played the wife because
Kathleen Quinlan.
Thank you.
Academy Award nominee Kathleen. Wait,
what was she nominated for?
She was nominated for Apollo 13.
Ah,
oh yeah,
she played the rocket
straight to the moon. Rob,
I no
bang pow.
I like Kathleen Quinlan. We'll talk.
Oh,
about
she was
her.
Good. She was great in this. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thankless role, but she was good.
Yeah, I mean,
I well, we'll talk about it. I have some okay. things to say about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Actually, J.M., this was your suggestion. Why don't you tell us when you first saw Breakdown?
Well, I saw it. Well, first of all, I suggested it because they just released a new Blu-ray of it like a month or two ago, and I just got mine in the mail. It's from like an Australian company called Imprint. It's like a special edition of Breakdown.
Do you have to put that Blu-ray in upside down?
That was so...
I do, and I Paul Hogan has to do it for me.
I'm surprised. I mean, I haven't bought a piece of physical media in a long time. Mm. Jam, you still have these things. Is your Netflix broken?
No, well, I'm a big advocate for physical media. I think it looks better than streaming. Sometimes, like, the aspect ratio is funny on streaming. Streaming is very unreliable. Mm-hmm. Look, I still subscribe to, like, a billion streaming things. Don't get me wrong. But if it's something I care about and love, I will absolutely still buy the Blu-ray. And also, like, you know, I don't buy a lot of stuff on, like, Apple. Like, if I want to buy something, I usually get a DVD or a Blu-ray. But I did buy like a Sesame Street thing for my kids at one point, and that fucking disappeared. Like, I bought like five movies on iTunes, and one of them has already disappeared because of some vague rights issue.
It's
so
a fraud.
Physical media is the way to go. And you know, actually, I tried to buy Breakdown on DVD when like a video store in my neighborhood was closing.
This one's
like,
not for sale.
10 years ago. No, I went to get it and someone had rented it, so it wasn't there. And then I later found out that it was like one of my roommates that had rented it.
Did he return it, or did you just keep the DVD?
We just watched the rented one and then I forgot about it. So I'm glad I
finally got it on your system for a while.
Yeah, but I watched this movie in the theater and it had a big impact on me.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. It was a huge movie for me and my friends at the time. I don't have any specific recollections other than I remember what theater I saw it in, which was a beautiful old single screen theater in Toronto that unfortunately closed down and became like an event space. And maybe I've talked about this theater before, but that was the theater that got turned into event space where my school had our high school prom.
That's kind of neat, though.
And I remember, it was kind of neat, but I remember, like, at the prom just thinking about, like, man, this is where I watched Breakdown that time.
I'd rather be watching Breakdown. JM, dance with me. Oh, I just wish I was watching Breakdown.
You're no Quinlan. Get out of here.
That's eerily close to the truth. But I also remember, like, seeing it in a matinee and coming out of the theater like into the daylight and just feeling drained, like in a good way. Like it had just felt like me and my friends and everyone in the theater had just like been through an ordeal.
Just hugging
like,
each other.
I felt physically exhausted. Yeah, and it's weird. And then like when it came out on video, I bought it on VHS and watched it again at home with my dad, I think. And we had the same exact experience. By the end of it, we were just exhausted. Like, we just felt completely drained. It was just 90 minutes of tension and suspense. And by the time that release came where it ends, like, I think we just went to bed in silence. So I've always loved this movie. And I always thought this was, like, a niche movie that, like, me and my friends loved, but that never got a lot of acclaim. But now with the Blu-ray, and I've seen some other people just talking about it on articles and podcasts, like, it does seem like this movie, there is a revival of interest in this movie, which makes me very happy. So that's partly why I wanted to talk about it on the show.
Okay.
What about you, Blaine?
The first time I had a Breakdown was the movie
we're talking movie about Breakdown.
Okay. No, I don't really remember where or when I saw this movie, but I definitely have seen this movie. Like you, JM, it must have made an impact on me because, like, I remembered so much about it, but I always confused it later with, like, the one with Meatloaf.
Black Dog?
Yeah, Black Dog. And maybe it's just because they're both trucker movies or whatnot, but when I saw Kurt Russell, when, like, the opening scene of, like, following that car, I was like, oh, yeah, like, all these memories came flooding back about how much I liked this movie, but it kind of faded into the background for me. So I was really excited to watch it again. But it's one of those movies that I just love so much. It's almost like a real-time movie where you're following this person trying to do something impossible in real time in the movie. Like, remember the movie with Johnny Depp called In the Nick of Time?
It's just called Nick of Time because his name is Nick.
Oh, my God. Okay,
not in the Nick.
So I remember loving that movie because it's like, how is he going to get out of the situation? And the same with, like, Breaking Bad and stuff. Like, but this, right. This movie is just so well done that way. But it's weird that I didn't remember it so much. I think I was trying to think of why, and I think it might just be because we're in this kind of this backdrop for so long in the movie. We're in the, like, this Nevada-esque place in the desert for so long that nothing feels like it changes. It feels like it's in the same locale for so long. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out why I don't why I didn't remember it. But I can understand why you're exhausted, because it's a trip of a movie. Rob, did you see this movie before?
Actually, before you say anything, Rob, I do just want to correct myself. His name was not Nick in Nick of Time.
It was Time.
No, his name was Gene Watson. Wow.
His name was Gene Wilder. Would have been a better casting.
Yeah, then why would it just be called Nick of Time and not A Nick of Time?
I'm pretty sure there probably was, like, another movie that year called In the Nick of Time, and they were like,
In the Nick of Time, like, and they just didn't want to do it.
On the poster.
Sorry.
Or something.
But that's one where, like, and someone is kidnapped, and he's in a train station. He needs to, like, find out he needs to get help before they... Anyway, real time.
He has to assassinate, like, a politician, yeah. Or else they'll kill his daughter or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good setup for a movie.
In the 90s, people just kidnapped people if they wanted someone to do something. No one did anything
the
themselves.
Kidnappy 90s. Yeah.
Do these dishes.
Should we rob
else...
a bank?
No, just kidnap someone.
Yeah,
it's easier.
Exactly. But this one, you know, that one was kind of like a little bit of a complex setup. You have to kill someone to do it. But this one, really, we've all been on road trips. We've all had the experience of, like, losing someone on a trip and being like, where'd they go? And just not really knowing where they were. And that feels like this. It feels
what
like
happened
so
to that
real.
Person, Blaine?
What person?
Oh, my God.
They're gone now.
Blaine, I've seen your vacation snaps, and you always wear, like, baggy khakis with, like, a tucked-in polo shirt. So we've all been there.
We've all been
what
there.
I'm saying.
Okay, fair enough. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I saw this movie, I think, on VHS. I think we just rented it at my dad's. And the reason why the CB thing resonated with me, because my dad was crazy about CB radios. So he would have pointed it out and been like, ah, CB radios.
Wait, did you have a CB scanner in your house? Or
yeah, like, we had a police scanner in my house. And honestly, like, my dad would listen to it all the time. And it was really annoying, actually, because it had this, like, it, like, would do this, like, beeping because... I don't know. Maybe you're not supposed to have it or something. I don't know.
That's so funny. My grandmother had one in her house. She lived alone, and it would just be on all the time. And it would just scan through all the available CB channels. And then when anyone was talking on it, it would, like, freeze on that channel and pick up whatever was happening. And I remember, like, I got in an accident. In a car accident, my grandmother first heard about it on the TV radio and phoned my mom to be like, there was a person matching Blaine's description that is unconscious being taken to the hospital right now.
We have a white, twerpy-looking fella. Mid-30s.
Baggy pants.
Blue polo t-shirt.
Yeah, he's unconsciously singing Blink-182. Maybe we should just call it at the scene. Maybe he doesn't need to go to the hospital. But yeah, it's so crazy that, like, people of a certain generation in certain jobs, I feel, like, loved the CB scanner. Like, my grandmother was a nurse, so she loved hearing the paramedics arrive on scene and, like, she loved that stuff.
Yeah.
But it was always so distracting. You try to talk to your grandmother, and she'd be like, just a minute. And she, like, listened to this.
Yeah.
We have multiple homicide, and that's
it's my dad whenever I try to bond with him. Hey, how about some cats, old man? He's like, wait a minute.
Can we open our Christmas presents yet? Just
until after this fire's done.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think bonding with you is more exciting than homicides? Come on.
No. Yeah, but I hadn't seen this in since then, and hadn't thought about it since then, and so yeah, I was ready. I was ready for, like, you know, to be broken down and built back up again.
Like, going to an acting
break
school.
Down, can you break down the plot of the movie for us?
Run it down. No, I can break it down. Let's see, it's the same thing. So it stars Kurt Russell as this guy named Jeff, very guy name, and his wife. They are driving through the desert in their Jeep Grand Cherokee. Very, very, you know, nice car, I think, for the time. Everybody seems to be very impressed by his car. They're like, "City boy with his Jeep Grand Cherokee. You got the CD player in there."
Well, they're phasing out the Cherokee name too, so that's
right because of the
so that's already dated.
Exactly.
Also, I was surprised the Jeep let. Like, I was wondering if they would actually have the logo on the car, because if I was a car company, I probably wouldn't want my car front and center in a movie called Breakdown.
You'd think that, but I mean, they sort of give this car, like, the loving look. Like, even at the point when, like, somebody drives Kurt Russell off the road in it and he ends up going in the river, it's like, this car can really handle well under those conditions. You sort of think he's just going to drive it through the river and sort of up the riverbank and drive it away.
He's like, "I can't believe I got this at the dealer for zero down. Jesus, this is crazy."
Yeah. No, it's like those parts in the car commercial where, like, they show, like, a Jeep off-roading, and you're like, why would they need to do that? It's probably because MC Gainey is trying to murder
them. We've all been there. We've all been there. Yeah. But so they are just driving, and he's kind of distracted, and she's sleeping, and he sort of reaches back to get a thermos or something, and he almost, you know, this truck comes from out of nowhere and almost hits him, and he ends up, like, yelling at they have, like, a yelling thing. They're like, "Hey, you asshole!" Ah! But it's a little bit disturbing because you think you're safe, you're driving, and then something bad happens, and it really shakes you, you know? So they decide to pull off at the next gas station or whatever, and
en route, the local Ontario.
You know, just take a breather. And so they do. Fills up the gas, and oh shit, the guy in the truck is stopped there too, and he sort of gives Kurt Russell a hard time.
I love how aggressively he likes the car too. He's like, "Oh, you got a nice car there. You got
air conditioning." Woo-wee!
Yeah,
rack
and
pinion steering, huh?
Nice car.
Thanks.
You got your air, CD, leather. Looks to me like you sprung for the whole nine yards.
Yeah, guess so. But suppose that rig of yours there is what you really need out here, huh?
Why would you want a piece of shit like that when you got a ride like this? What a man needs out here is a CB radio.
The ads for the Cherokee read itself right there. Like, car so nice, get your wife kidnapped for it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Writes itself.
But and this is MC Gainey, who, as we know, is a bad motherfucker from Lost.
Oh, he's
most
so good
notably. Lost. Yeah. Also, I've been rewatching Lost, so it was great to see him. It's awesome.
Oh, wow. We should do Lost.
We should do Lost.
Yeah, that wouldn't take any time at all.
We just have to dedicate the rest of the podcast to doing Lost.
A four-part series on Lost. We should just do it. It's so good.
But he says his CB radio handle should be "Shit for Brains," and you know, gives him heck for.
Seems like a little long. For a radio handle.
I would go with, like, Tex or, like, you know, the Midnight Rambler.
Yeah.
But so they get back on the road and they keep on driving, and then something happens to their car. They have a breakdown.
Everyone looks into the camera at this point.
Yeah.
Winks.
And, like, it's like quite the breakdown, because all the panels are going off, like, all the lights are going crazy. You don't know what's happening, and the car isn't going to move anymore, so they're sort of stuck. And what can they do? They're going to wait till somebody passes and wave them down and see if they can get a ride or something. Next person who passes is that truck with MC Gainey in it. And they think it's trouble, but then he passes, but then he stops.
Yeah, I love that moment when he stops and turns around. It's so, I mean, it's like you were talking about with like almost hitting the car. It's that like you think you're safe, but like that's all an illusion. It's just all an illusion. It can be taken away at any moment. And I love that kind of core value in this movie. I remember when I was visiting New York one time with my friend, and it was like late at night, like 2 a.m, and there was this group of 4 guys that just started following us, being like, we should kill these guys. We should just push these guys into an alley and kill. And they were just like behind us. And I was just like, you could. Like, there's nothing stopping you.
Wait, what? They said that out loud?
Yeah. Behind us, walking, like intimidating us and surrounding us. And it was very, like, I don't know. Like,
are you sure they weren't practicing their lines for a Broadway play?
We could kill them. We could kill them.
And then
like
comes
a
dance break. Breakdown.
We could just kill these guys in an alley, Max Bialystock.
That sounds terrifying.
But it's that thing where everyone has this kind of false sense of security, like, oh, that won't happen to me, which we've seen tons of in the pandemic with people being like, I don't need to wear a mask.
Yeah, Ted Nugent.
Right?
Yeah. Dumb fuck.
Jesus Christ. So, I mean, it's one of those really great moments in this movie where it just, that dread sinks in, and I just felt it in this movie. It was really good.
But luckily, somebody else comes by and sort of like saves the day in a way. They get this 18-wheeler pulls up, and J.T. Walsh gets out, and he is kind and helpful, which is great because J.T. Walsh is awesome. And he's like, well, you know, I could drive you guys to the diner down the road, and you could call somebody, and they could call a tow truck, and they could tow your truck. But Kurt Russell doesn't want to leave his brand new Jeep Cherokee, Grand Cherokee, excuse me, on the highway. So he decides to stay behind, and instead, his wife goes with J.T. Walsh alone. And she'll, you know, they'll come back for him. So he waits a while.
No, he'll go in the tow truck and meet them at the
diner. Yeah. So he waits a while, and then he wanders out to the front of the Jeep where the hood's open, and he's like, oh, it's just these two wires aren't connected. And then he connects them, and then he starts back up, and it's as good as new. It's that easy. And so he goes to the diner, and this is where things get a little bit tricky because his wife's not there. And, you know, where is she?
I don't know.
Tell me, Rob.
I mean, he tries to get information from the bartender guy who runs the place. I assume his name is Bell. And and he's, like, really aggressive about it. But this guy doesn't know anything. But he sort of freaks out. He's about to have a breakdown, it seems, but he doesn't. And he goes outside, and this like sort of simple kid tells him that he saw his wife going down the road, down like a certain road or something like that. So he goes in his...
And he also tells him the cops are in on it, to not phone the cops.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But this is kind of after he also finds the trucker on the road.
Oh yeah, he like runs J.T. Walsh off.
Oh
the
yeah,
road,
that's right.
And then like flags down the sheriff and says like, "Hey, this guy, my wife got in this guy's truck." And then, you know, this was the big moment, cuz that's another thing I didn't mention about when I first saw Breakdown is I don't even know if I was that excited to see it, but the trailer for Breakdown played in front of every movie. Like, I had seen that trailer so many times by the time I actually saw Breakdown. Mm-hmm. And there are some key lines that I still remember from that trailer. And one of them is J.T. Walsh saying, like, I don't know how to tell you, mister, but I've never seen you before in my life.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wah. Yeah. And I don't even think the trailer really tips off like what's happening. Like, they show you kind of some snippets of the first act,
like,
and
the
then some like images.
Yeah.
So like I like going into the movie, like I don't remember knowing that that we knew that he wasn't going crazy, mm-hmm. or that it was something supernatural, or, you know, like, we didn't really know what the answer to this mystery of what happened to his wife, what the resolution of that was going to be.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love that this scene, because even the way it plays out here, like, we don't totally know happening.
We kind of doubt him.
He could just be having a breakdown.
Could be having a breakdown. It's tricky.
I totally doubted him. Like, the way G.T. Walsh acts and the way it's directed, I'm like, I believe him more than Kurt Russell in this scene.
Yeah. He is an expert gaslighter. That is actual gaslighting.
Sir, what do you have to say about this? Officer, I don't know. I'm driving along. This fellow runs me off the road, starts hollering about his wife. I swear, I've never seen him before in my life.
And you didn't give his wife a ride?
No, sir.
He's lying. Sir, would it be all right with you if I search your truck?
Hell yes, go ahead. Name's Barr, by the way, Red Barr. All my permits are current. You can see them. They're right
up
there.
That won't be necessary. Yeah, just stand back behind the line, both of you.
There's a lot of economic, like, prejudice at play here, where, you know, obviously these are people from the city. They're perceived as being very rich, and conversely, Kurt Russell and Kathleen Quinlan kind of see, like, the truckers and the people who live here as just kind of folksy, simple people. Mm-hmm. And so I think the movie's ultimately about those, like, two prejudices kind of being shed, or realizing that they're not true. But I think there is that moment when he pulls over J.T. Walsh, and we as the audience know it's the same guy, but the sheriff says, like, this maybe could have been a different truck. Mm-hmm. Like, are you sure? Did you get the license plate? And I think, and you want, as the audience, you know, Kurt Russell would be like, I talked to this guy, like, I know it's that guy, but you get the sense that there's maybe, like, this voice in the back of Kurt Russell's head where he's like, you know, it probably could have been another trucker. Like, I didn't really see the human being behind the trucker hat and the sunglasses and the truck. Like,
for sure.
You know, like, he could have that bias as someone who has been reductive about the people in this rural community that he is visiting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, like, a theme that sort of runs throughout a bunch of movies, too. Like, that's, like, part of Deliverance, obviously, and lots of movies. And there's, like, also variations on that as well. Like, we talked about, last week, we talked about Quick Change, you know, and that's basically, like, people in the city being like, the city is terrible, you know, it's bad out here. And this is people being like, the rural areas, they're crazy.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny, that whole thing with Deliverance, or that, you know, that whole kind of trope was certainly popularized around that time for the next, you know, few decades with Deliverance. But I remember reading that the book that Deliverance is based
on takes place in New York.
The author. No, but the author got that idea because he was on a trip in the South and, like, some strangers approached him or something when he was lost, but they gave him directions, like, they helped him. and he took that idea and just changed it into this, you know, horror story.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet that guy thought I had a pretty mouth.
So I've always kind of, like, yeah, been, you know, yeah, wary of that storyline where it's like, yeah, someone from the, you know, civilized city goes into, like, a rural area where people are backwards and evil. But I think this movie does a good job of doing what I was just kind of saying before, of being it, like, or of having it be the situation where both parties kind of, like, have a false sense of who the other is.
Yeah.
Like, I think this movie would be, like, we're totally on Kurt Russell's side, obviously, but he also is, like, kind of a cartoon version of this, like, big city elite. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, we were talking about the way he's dressed with the khakis and the tucked-in golf shirt and his sunglasses and the fancy car. And we find out that he doesn't have the money that he's necessarily presenting that he does. And, you know, that's kind of the lesson that the bad guys learn in terms of, like, judging who this city guy is.
We're not all rich over here. Don't rob me.
The movie does...
It's not going to be worth your time.
No, don't rob Rob.
So, yeah, he goes back to the diner, and then he goes to meet this. Then he talks to the simple guy, and the simple guy sends him down this road. And it turns out that it's a sort of dead end. and behind him, MC Gainey comes up, and you know, it turns into this big sort of chase action sequence where he's trying to get away, and this is where the car goes off the road.
I love that reveal in this scene where he like screeches up to the edge of this cliff, and then he just goes over the cliff. Like he just floors it over the cliff, and it kind of tumbles down.
That's the four-wheel drive.
This incline. Yeah, it really works in this car. But it's one of those great pieces of storytelling where, you know, you think he's caught, and then he does that, like he chooses the third door thing where he just like goes down this cliff. It was great.
And there's like 27 of those. That's partly what I love about this movie.
Yeah,
you know, there's
great.
Like that's there's that story. I don't know if it's true or not, but you know, they say like Kurosawa would like give his writers like, you know, a situation like that where you think there's no escape or no way out, and then have them try to figure out how to get out of it. And I love that happens so many times in this movie. And like it totally makes sense. And it doesn't feel like a cheat because there are repercussions for him driving off of a goddamn cliff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
And just the way it's done, like we have like the hood of the car and you see it going over the cliff. Mm-hmm. And then.
Yeah. It's magical. Yeah.
It's magical.
Yeah. It's well done. Well,
I also, one of the great things about watching this movie is like, everything feels so real. Like everything in movies these days, I mean, I think either they're so used to CGI that they don't even, I mean, like nothing feels as real as the stuff in this, as impactful as anything like this. Like the Fast and Furious movies, like those don't make me like squirm in my seat like the way that like the car action does in this movie.
Well, and it's all real for the most part. So I did watch a little bit of the special features on the Blu-ray. I did watch like an interview with the director, and he did say that all of the sort of action stuff is real, with the exception of at the very end, there's like a little bit of miniature.
No,
work.
Yeah, those are Hot Wheels over the bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, and the trucks on the bridge for sure. Yeah.
And Lego characters, Lego Kurt Russell. It's, you know, we know.
Right. But the vast majority of it is all like real cars doing stunts and and that, yeah, that adds to the feeling that, you know, this is really happening and that you're right in it. It's so tense. I'm tense talking about it.
It is very tense. Movie. Yeah. And also like, you know, we haven't really talked about it, but like the horror of the wife's situation, of Kathleen Quinlan's situation, is like, it's sort of bigger than the whole movie. And like, maybe it's something, again, that we're more aware of, like, now, like, you know, how terrible the world is to women. But, I mean, like, when she is, like, kidnapped by, when she disappears, you know, like, you really just think, like, the worst. And it feels like, I don't know, it feels very, like, palpable and real, you know? And, like, in the end, she's, like, relatively okay. But, like, your mind goes to much darker places than this movie takes you, I think.
Well, the movie kind of takes us there.
Yeah.
That when MC Gainey is talking about like her curly hair up like above and
oh,
below.
Oh, JT Walsh. Yeah, that's one thing I had forgotten is that the JT Walsh basically implies that he's like sexually assaulted his wife. And you almost get the sense too that like he's just saying that. Like as one of his many mind fucks, and he is just so vile. He is just one of, I don't know if it's just my bias for liking this movie, but I feel like he's one of the best movie villains. Like he is just so detestable.
He's
also so real.
And he's good in the fact that he's so not expressive with his like evilness. He's not cackling. He's not like putting the pads of his fingers together. He's just like, this is what's gonna happen.
Excellent. I'll get you, exactly. Kurt Russell, Jeff.
But like, you know, while we're talking about her character and like her kind of role in this movie, like I think one thing I was conscious of going into it is, you know, we've become a little more aware as a society of movies kind of like using female characters as like victims to kind of activate the male characters as heroes in movies. So I wasn't sure like how that was going to play out in this. And I think this movie actually does escape a lot of those trappings. I mean, like, you can't get away from the fact that the central premise is about a guy whose wife disappears 10 minutes into the movie, and it's about him trying to find her. But, like, I was thinking about this movie a lot in terms of comparing it to the movie Frantic. Do you guys remember?
Yeah.
That movie?
Like, barely.
Yeah. It's Harrison Ford. It's a Polanski movie, which is a whole other can of worms. But yeah. In that movie, like, I think there are a few big differences, and one of which being that the wife character in that is just such a non-character. Like, I don't even remember. I've seen that movie a lot, and I don't even remember what she looks or sounds like. Like, I think this movie does, even in the small amount of time we get to see Kathleen Quinlan, they inject her with so much, like, warmth and personality that...
She's the positive one in their relationship. She's the one that keeps them going forward. Yeah.
It kind of, like... Well, for one, it invests you more in Kurt Russell's struggle, right? Mm-hmm. And then, two, they also, like, even in her absence, they find a way for her character to actually be smart and, like, motivating the action, like, because there's the scene after MC Gainey catches Kurt Russell and they take him to see JT Walsh and they admit that they kidnapped his wife. We find out that Kathleen Quinlan basically saved both their lives,
right,
by lying and saying that they were, like, the heirs to this donut contest fortune, or not heirs, but the winners of this donut contest fortune, and that, you know, so Kurt Russell knows the exact amount of money that he's going to say. So basically, like, even though we don't see her, she has saved both of their lives.
That's a good point.
And the movie does little things like that that, you know, keep her from just being this kind of phantom victim figure. Well, you know, like, the term fridging is used a lot, yeah, for, like, when a female character is murdered,
yeah,
and she's literally put in a fridge at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking about that when watching it, fridging the woman.
But she does also get a big moment at the end, too.
Right.
So I think, like, yeah, that this setup is, like, inherently, you know, something you want to kind of flag in terms of the issues we're talking about. But I think, like, if you're going to tell this story, this movie does it in a pretty, I don't want to say progressive, but in a responsible way. Does that make sense?
So you're saying if you're going to fridge the woman, just do it. Just really put her in a fridge.
I'm not saying that.
No, I know. I'm just kidding around. But, like, no, I understand what you're saying. That, like,
I'm saying that if she feels like 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I don't even think that it is that true. I'm saying if you're going to tell this story about a woman that's disappeared and a man who's trying to find her, at the very least, you can make her a real person. Mm-hmm. And it feels like she's a real person. And not only is that, does that make your movie slightly less misogynistic, it also, like, makes the movie better because you invest so much in the Kurt Russell character's actions because you feel the investment in the Kathleen Quinlan character. You feel like this is a real marriage and this is these are real people, mm-hmm, trying to save their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's skip ahead a little bit. I mean, eventually Kurt Russell, he sort of hops a ride on JT Walsh's 18 wheeler and JT Walsh drives him back home. And this was,
well, he didn't talk about the bank. How they send him to the bank to get the $90,000.
He sent him to the bank, yeah, to get the $90,000. And this is a really good scene too, because yeah, he goes to get the money. He doesn't have that much money, so what's he going to do? There's this guy. He's about to, like, tell the bank teller, like, what is happening, but then this, like, tough guy comes over and talks to the bank teller, and then, you know, is this guy part of the bad guys or is he just some random guy? And ultimately, he doesn't tell him, but.
That's the thing, is because he doesn't know who's part of this gang. Everyone that looks slightly working class might just be evil.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because the bank teller couldn't be in on it, but this other guy could. Yeah, totally. Exactly, it's that prejudice again.
Yeah.
And it's great the way he, you know, he's trying to figure things out. He goes into the washroom to try to, like, get something to fight back when he gets there, but he finds a kind of
plunger handle.
Letter opener.
Yeah, from the desk.
And then also the money bands, so that it looks like he has more money than he does, to fool.
And that even just that scene where he's in the bathroom and he's looking through the cupboards is so great, because it's like, again, you know, I kept thinking watching this movie is like what makes it work is it makes you feel like you're in control in a way because he's doing everything that you would try to do. Like
like a horror movie in a way.
Yeah. And then I was listening to the director's interview on the DVD and he was saying that same thing, that his mantra for making this movie was like he wanted to have the Kurt Russell character do everything that you would do in that situation. So like, yeah, having him rummage through the cupboards in the bathroom to see if he can find anything that he can use as a weapon is like what you would do in that situation.
And he's also very sweaty, which is what I would be in that situation. And really most situations.
You're sweaty just describing
it. I'm perspiring like crazy over here. Yeah. But yeah, so then he gives the money to MC Gainey, then MC Gainey sort of pulls him into the truck, and eventually the cop, the sheriff or whatever, I think he like pulls him over and he ends up shooting MC Gainey and MC Gainey shoots the cop. And then Kurt Russell just sort of leaves him kind of to die, you know?
Well, he
no, he radios him.
And the dude was already radioing, you know?
Yeah. He picked up the CB radio. He radioed Blaine's grandma. She radioed the ambulance.
Yeah, but what I love about this scene is that we never need to see that cop again. He has seen that this person is innocent, and he's like a good guy. He wasn't the one that shot him. He was the one trying to get away. Everything that he was saying was accurate. So like in the end, we don't need this big like denouement resolution where the cop's like, that's him. That's the hero of like Highway 71.
It would be nice if they visited him in the hospital.
Yeah, just the scene where like his arms in a sling and he's getting ice cream with Kathleen Quinlan and Kurt Russell.
That's
the end.
What I needed from this movie. Yeah, and then he hitches a ride to J.T. Walsh's house, and this is a scene that like kind of blew me away because it's such a weird reversal. And I kept on thinking this movie is kind of like Straw Dogs because, I mean, it's obviously like in some ways like Kurt Russell is this guy who has to like sort of prove his masculinity, you know, when these more manly guys take his wife, right? And then he has to be like, can I man up enough to get my wife back? But anyway, so.
And you know, that's totally what, you know, if we want to talk about like the real original like evil trucker movie, it's Duel.
Right.
Like the Spielberg movie. And that movie is literally about like a wimpy little guy who's just gone through a divorce, reasserting his masculinity by fending off this trucker. So yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a part of this sort of subgenre of evil truck
movies. For sure.
Movies.
But the interesting part that I found fascinating was that we sort of get to see J.T. Walsh's family, which is sort of like, makes him like vulnerable. Like, in a Straw Dog situation, if Kurt Russell decided to go apeshit, like, you know, he could hurt J.T. Walsh's family, his wife, little Deke. What kind of name is Deke?
Is it short for Deacon?
Oh, like Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
He's just really good at hockey, that's all. He's just good at hockey.
My wife is locked up in a hole in your fucking barn. And if you don't give me the key, I'm going to blow your fucking head off!
Warren, what's going on?
I don't know, honey. Just stay calm.
Your husband's a murderer and a kidnapper is what's going on. Now give me the fucking key!
Freeze, mister.
You don't want to do that, kid. Put the gun down.
Don't listen to him, Deke. You just keep that gun right on him.
It's an interesting scene because, first of all, it humanizes J.T. Walsh in a big way because he has this boy who he clearly loves. He gives him a little Swiss Army knife, probably Kurt Russell's. He's like, hey, you can use this when you take your first hostages.
See, it makes him so much creepier for
that's
me.
That's what I was saying.
Because life.
Like it's if you just went back to like some evil lair, you'd just be like, yeah, he's the villain, he's gross. But like having him have this family who doesn't know that he's, you know, he has like
a psychopath. Yeah,
he's kidnapping people and murdering them in his barn, you know, 30 feet from their house. It just adds this layer of, oh, I just hate him so much.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's so calm through the whole interaction that it just really, you know, he's like the snake in the grass. He's just so chill.
He only has one level, JT Walsh. He has here, you know. He doesn't go any higher. He doesn't go any lower because there's nowhere else to go lower.
He's amazing. He died like a year after this movie came out, way too young. And he is just incredible. I just think he's an amazing actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I just coincidentally, I watched the Nicolas Cage movie Red Rock West the other day. Have you guys ever seen that?
Haven't seen it. Never heard
of it.
Weirdly, it's another movie where a drifter comes to a small town and is almost murdered because they run into J.T. Walsh.
It happened a lot in the 80s and 90s. It was a big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they, you know, they get his wife from the freezer. They lock all the other bad guys there. Then the one bad guy who has escaped lets them all out, and they go chasing after them. They're driving away in this truck, and they're all chasing after them. And this is like, you know, the real, like, you know, the real, like, cool car chase scene. JT Walsh is in an 18-wheeler. The other two guys are there. One guy explodes. JT Walsh is sort of jackknifing his 18-wheeler, and then he, like, separates the saucer section from it. I don't know what you call it in trucker terms. I worked at a truck stop. You think I would know that. But
you don't know the truck terms. You just know the Trek terms. That's great.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And then, I mean, JT Walsh eventually like pushes the truck off a bridge. It's about to fall off the bridge. And then the truck sort of goes off and like it's all hanging off. And Kathleen Quinlan is stuck in the cab of the truck because her leg is pinned. And Kurt Russell, he is sort of like dangling from the from the transport.
I love this stuff. Like, this is the stuff in screenwriting that I just absolutely like. The fortunately, unfortunately, like, fortunately, the truck doesn't fall all the way off the edge, but unfortunately, they have to climb up the truck now, and they're not like. I just love that whole game of the script here. It's wonderful.
And it never feels like unnatural or like the screenwriter's throwing in an obstacle. Like everything
it's
that comes
organic.
Up is organic, and it's not like it's suspenseful and there's tension, but it's not like milked to the point where it feels phony. Like it all just feels so real.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, like, even that part with the chain where he's like whipping him with the chain, you're like, how's he going to get out of this? Like, I think that's writing that I just can get behind and love. Like, when you keep on like, how are they going to get out of this? And then they get out of it in a way that you would never think, where Kurt Russell just grabs the chain and pulls him off the truck. It's a wonderful moment.
In the 80s and 90s, we got so many action scenes where, like, the good guy, you know, beats the bad guy and has some terrible quip or one-liner. And here, all we need is he grabs the chain. There's that moment where they both lock eyes and J.T. Walsh knows that he's been beaten. Yeah. And that's all we need. And then
it's
he
like the Western. It goes right into their eyes, like an extreme close-up.
Totally. Yeah, and we've got those beautiful blue eyes of Kurt Russell, which are really on display here. We've got a few scenes where they really just showcase those peepers.
you're describing it like the Macy's Day Parade. I love it.
Well, because there's also like the scene where like he's hiding in the rafters of the barn and his wife's on the ground. And through the tiny hole, like way above, she can see his eye,
she's
which
like,
sounds unbelievable.
Husband.
But he's got like piercing Sinatra eyes. Like, of course she would see that from way down there.
I mean, I'm surprised the bad guys don't see it. It's casting like a glare.
And am I wrong in that scene that J.T. Walsh takes his truck into the barn and then she comes out of a bottom compartment? So, like, the entire time that Kurt Russell was on that truck, she was just below him? Like, it's just heartbreaking.
I think it was the other guy's barn. Okay.
Yeah.
Or the other guy's truck, sorry.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Still creepy.
I like my way better. Anyway.
Yeah, but then the final thing is they see J.T. Walsh sort of moving down there. And what are you going to do about that? Well, Kathleen Quinlan knows what she's going to do. She puts the thing in neutral, and then the transport crashes down on top of him. Then he's extra dead.
Yeah.
Not just paralyzed for life.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing that happens at the end that I don't think I noticed before, but I was really thinking about this movie because I really love this movie, was it's just like a simple thing to kind of like show what's happened to these characters. And that's that the very opening of the movie, once the opening credits have finished, the first shot is of that license plate on the Jeep Grand Cherokee that says Massachusetts on the shiny new car. And that, you know, right there, that's great because, you know, we see the landscape, we see where they are, we see that they're out of place. It without, you know, a word of dialogue, we kind of know what's going on. But then at the end of the movie, one of the last shots is of the license plate on the beat up truck that they were driving. It's an Arizona plate. It's dirty. And then, you know, the camera pulls up and we go out. So, but it kind of like, you know, in terms of these characters, we have this visual cue for how they've changed, for how they've been compromised and dirtied and traumatized by this experience. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we have more for you. I have some trivia and some behind-the-scenes action right after this break.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, welcome back. This is Rewatchability. We're talking about Breakdown. And I have some trivia questions for you. And if you answer them all correctly, I'll let your wives go.
Oh, man.
Wait, what?
Damn. Okay, so it was dark.
It was dark.
Rob gave them a ride on his bicycle.
Yeah, they both had to do doubles, so it was a... I think that's a sixth time. I don't know how that works with the math. Okay, so. Oh, this one's interesting. The actress who plays Red Barr's wife, that's Red Barr is the J.T. Walt character. Do you think he's related to, like, William Barr? Sort of have some similarities, you know? Like, being psychotic. Okay, so the actress who plays Red Barr's wife is married in real life to which actor?
MC Gainey.
Incorrect.
Damn it.
That would be nepotism.
J.T. Walsh.
No, that would be nepotism. Okay. You can't just get your wife's jobs.
Wait, is the actor in this movie?
No.
Oh, damn it.
Can you give us a clue?
Yeah, like what movies they've been in?
Okay, well, they met way back in the day, and one of their mutual acquaintances was John Malkovich.
Oh.
Is it John Malkovich?
No.
John Malkovich's best friend, Charlie Sheen?
That's correct, no. Okay, it is Gary Sinise.
Oh my God, I almost said Gary Sinise because that is also a joke in being John Malkovich.
Well, I mean, they go back to the Chicago theater days.
Steppenwolf?
You know? Steppenwolf, yeah. They're both in that Of Mice and Men.
They're both in that popular rock group that sang Magic Carpet Ride. Yeah.
Don't forget the Pusher. Yeah, Moira Harris is how she's credited in the movie. But her last name is also Sinise, which is, you know, it's nice. Also,
so nice.
She is in a lot of John Mostow's other movies, or at least she's also in Terminator 3, which he also directed. Rise of the Machines?
I can't remember. It is.
I remember it not being very good. Also,
it was not.
Our friend MC Gainey also shows up in Terminator 3.
You know, I don't actually mind Terminator 3. I know a lot of people hate it. I think once you kind of, for one thing, you have to set your expectations lower because it's not the first two Terminator movies. But I also think if people, you know, take a look back at the Terminator franchise, once you've seen the movies that came after that, I think a lot of people are going to reappraise T3. Yeah.
We could
I
do
think it's
T3
got some good
someday.
Stuff.
We could sure. do that one. Have we done Terminator 1?
No.
Oh, let's do that then. That's awesome. Okay, so which 1994 Christmas movie reunites, and by reunites, I mean they don't share any scenes in this movie and they don't share any scenes in that movie, but which 1994 Christmas movie reunites J.T. Walsh and the guy who played the angry bartender? I believe his name is
Jesus
Robert
Christ.
McGee, maybe?
Okay.
Okay, wait.
Was he cremated?
That's Sam McGee.
Oh, I say the poem.
Oh, I know. I think I know.
What
is it? Is it the remake of Miracle on 34th Street?
It is. Yes, oh, wow. That's correct, J.M.
Jesus.
Yeah, I remember J.T. Walsh was in that.
The guy's name is Jack McGee. Still a great name. And he plays the drunken Santa Claus.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's also in lots of things. He's like, I was looking over his filmography, and he's been in like a bazillion movies. He's like the sheriff in a lot of things, like Basic Instinct, and he's in
He's also good in this too, because like he's creepy enough that if you're watching it for the first time, you could be like, is he in on it?
Exactly.
But he's also like, he's natural enough that you're like, yeah, I would act like that too if Kurt Russell came in saying what he was saying. And also, we forgot to mention the great moment in the movie where Kurt Russell first comes into the diner and is looking for his wife, and the sort of like female barfly just says, looks like she got away from you, cowboy.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And then she's like puking in the bathroom later. That's really, yeah. That was a weird scene.
And calls him cowboy again. Yeah. I'll be with you in a minute, cowboy.
I'm not a cowboy. I'm a cowpoke.
She'd probably just seen like Tombstone or something.
Mm. Yeah.
Or City
Slickers. Okay, so this one I ripped right off the IMDb trivia. So can you name three other films which feature both Kurt Russell and J.T. Walsh?
Three,
motherfuckers.
Was Kurt Russell in Miracle on 34th Street?
He was. He played Santa.
Wow.
He did play Santa later. That was
that's what I was thinking of.
All I can think of are John Carpenter movies. Was he in Big Trouble?
Nope.
In Little China? No. All right.
None of them are John Carpenter movies, I don't think.
Unlawful Entry.
No. Now you're just saying crimes. No.
Was he in baggy pants with polo shirt tucked in? That was a fashion crime.
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you. These are some good ones.
Dark Blue. No, wait, that was after this.
Okay, one of them is Tequila Sunrise. I haven't seen that, but okay. I have had the drink. And apparently Kurt Russell kills J.T. Walsh in that one as well. So, you know, synergy. Also, they're both in Backdraft.
Oh,
oh shit, of course.
And Executive Decision.
Oh, J.T. Walsh is in that?
Damn. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I was almost going to, like, because I knew that this Blu-ray was going to come at some point in the month, I almost suggested doing just Kurt Russell month on the show.
It's
May. Let's do it.
Why not?
Kurt Russell month.
Maybe we'll just do the rest of Kurt Russell movies.
Maybe we'll just pivot to being a Kurt Russell only podcast.
The Kurt cast.
The Russell cast. Damn it, yours is better.
Yeah, but then people will think we're talking about Kurt Cobain. Or somebody else named Kurt. Kurt Vonnegut. That would be good. I'd talk about Kurt Vonnegut.
There's already a Kurt Vonnegut podcast done by Alex Schmidty and Michael Swaim. Kurt Vonnegut.
Hmm.
Yeah. Check it out.
All right.
And it ended a while ago, but I think it's still online.
This movie was a big success. It debuted at number one with $12.3 million, which doesn't sound like a lot in today's numbers, but also sounds like a lot because I've never had even $1 million. So good for them. And it also earned, you know, $50 million overall in U.S. and Canada. So it was a big success for the sort of movie that that it was. They did have some other people that they were thinking of to play the lead. They talked to Dennis Quaid, Bruce Willis, Mel Gibson, and Ed Harris.
Hmm.
All good bits, except maybe Ed Harris looks too much like that guy at the bank, you know?
Yeah.
Like all the white guys, you know, it's like too many, too much. Also, Bruce Willis, get him out of there too.
Oh my God! Imagine if they got to that point and recast Ed Harris. Like we're just too attached to this bank.
He's
manager.
Really nailing it, you know.
I did hear that Jonathan Mostow, he did want Kurt Russell. Like he wrote this with Kurt Russell in mind.
Yeah,
because Kurt Russell is like he can do action, but like I don't know. You really do buy him as like this kind of husband from the city character. Whereas regular like Bruce dude. Willis, I don't think you would have bought as much as that character. Yeah.
No. Yeah. And I also love that Kurt Russell, like, he's just like, I mean, he's tough enough, but it's also, again, it's realistic. Like, it's in a worse version of this movie, it would be like, they didn't know that, you right. know, Jeff Taylor was a Navy yeah, exactly. SEAL yeah. or, you know, exactly. something
so
like
many
that.
Ex-Navy SEALs in like, movies. He, yeah, he's like weeds.
There's just so many, like, Murphy's Law bad guys out there. Like, you had to kidnap the daughter of the, like, most killingest Navy SEAL ever. Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, he's just a guy, but he's like, you know, he's still like, he probably goes to the gym. Jeff Taylor.
In the original script, he was going to be a war photographer.
Oh, that kind of makes sense. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that as a...
I heard that. So in the interview that I watched with Jonathan Mostow, he talks about that a lot.
Oh, yeah?
basically, like, so he made this movie with the De Laurentiises, like Dino and his daughter. And I guess, like, at a certain point, he was attached to another project and left Breakdown for a while. So they brought on another writer to, like, punch up his script. And what the other writer did was, instead of having it open the way it does, like, with them on the road, they were like, oh, we can't just open with them. We need some context. So they added this 10-page long prologue where we see Kurt Russell as, like, a videographer in, like, Bosnia shooting war footage, and he's like so traumatized by it, he's like, I can't do this anymore, we need to do it. I need a new job in California. And oh, that's well. What like motivates oh. the road trip. And so Jonathan Mostow said like he really didn't like that. He said it was like well written and everything, and you know, it was fine, but he just like he didn't want the movie to start there. And he said he kept waiting for like people to be like, oh yeah, you're right, we don't need it. And so he like even like pushed it to be like the last thing they shot was that prologue, but they still, everyone was still, the studio and the producers still wanted to do it. So they shot it. And then when it came time to like test screen the movie, he said he thought like, well, when we test screen the movie, everyone will say to lose that opening, but the test screening went really well. So everyone still wanted to keep it. And he was like, oh fuck. So he said he convinced them like, let's do one more test screening, like literally like the next night. They did another test screening, but exactly the same, but with that 10-minute opening removed. And he said they showed it to the audience and like the studio execs. And he said when they finished and they were about to count like the comment cards, he said the studio guys were like, you don't even need to look at the cards. It's a much better
nice.
Movie
yeah.
this way.
It would be. It would be. It's yeah. just you don't need all that context for it, because almost in a way, if you have that context, that he becomes a character that you can't really put yourself into.
Yeah, he's no longer an everyman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that someone is like a war photographer and then something awful happens in their own personal life.
I mean, that's a great movie.
That's a great movie, just not
one.
This movie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But also, like, if he was a war photographer, I don't feel like I'm saying the word photographer right.
Oh, okay. I think he was a videographer.
Videographer.
So you can say that word.
Say that. But like, if he was a war videographer, he would be a very hardened fella. Like, presumably, he would be used to like seeing people die and explosions. He might even have training with firearms. You know, he'd be right. embedded with like army dudes. Like, that's a whole different tenor of character than the Kurt Russell that I think we see in this movie, who does, well, and he feels like, yeah, somebody that you can be, somebody who's an everyman, someone you can relate to, and somebody who, like, would do, like, the stupid things, like, do, like, some karate moves with the plunger handle in the bathroom.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I mean, it also, I mean, your point earlier, JM, like, is he having a breakdown is a question we ask ourselves, but if he's already had the breakdown because of being a war photographer, then I think we're less liable to ask ourselves that question. So
right.
yeah, I think it takes away from the movie to have that. But that's cool. That's really cool background for this movie that was in there.
Did you, Rob, did you read about how this movie came to be, what it originally was?
No, the story that I read was that he had the idea while driving through the Las Vegas desert.
I think that informed part of the story in terms of fearing locals when you're on a road trip. But the sort of impetus behind the movie, and I did not know this until earlier today when I watched this special feature on the Imprint Blu-ray, which did not sponsor this podcast. I don't know why I keep bringing it up. But he said that, amazingly enough, this movie began as an adaptation of the Stephen King short story Trucks. Which most of us know best as the story that inspired Maximum Overdrive, which is literally about evil trucks. So I guess they had the rights to the story. Like he somehow befriended Dino De Laurentiis, who gave him money to finish an earlier movie. They collaborated later. I guess De Laurentiis had the rights to the Stephen King story Trucks that had been made into Maximum Overdrive. And I think there is another movie version of Trucks, like a TV movie or something. But so it's a movie about evil trucks. He was going to make it for them. They began pre-production on it, but they found out that for some legal reason, they couldn't title the movie Stephen King's
Why
Trucks.
Bother?
Which is how they were going to market the movie. Because they couldn't do that, they they had to scrap the whole movie. But they'd already done this, they'd already found locations and stuff for the story about killer trucks. So Mostow came up with this story, he wrote Breakdown to kind of use this pre-existing work that they'd done to get ready for Trucks. Which is kind of amazing.
That's gold from shit, literally. Yeah. Literally. Can you imagine, you have another Maximum Overdrive on your hands?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I saw on IMDb, which I don't think is true, which I think is a mistake, is that it was based on the Dutch movie Spoorloos. Do you know that film, Jam?
Yeah, that's The Vanishing.
The Vanishing. Yeah, that's right. But I looked into it, and I couldn't find any other information stating that whatsoever. And there is actually a remake of The Vanishing called The Vanishing with Kiefer Sutherland that came out in 1994. So I don't know why
That's terrible. We were talking about the ending where the cop has his arm in a sling and they all go out for ice cream. That's basically how the American remake of The Vanishing ends.
Wow.
She disappears at a gas station, which is similar. But that, I was talking about that movie with my wife the other day because I was trying to think of other movies like Frantic and Breakdown where a wife disappears. And I think Flight Plan with Jodie Foster is kind of like that, but with her kid.
Right.
And we brought up The Vanishing, but that is much more about it breaks the perspective. You see the kidnapper and killer's perspective, and then it flashes forward in time. It's much more about this guy's obsession and the fact that he can't let this one thing go. So it's very different. I did read that, or I didn't read, I heard in that same interview that he was inspired by The Lady Vanishes, the Hitchcock movie that he saw at a young age, which is also about a character disappearing and also a more compact setting. It's all in a train.
Right.
I think that makes more sense. But I mean, who knows? Maybe that was part of an inspiration. Sure.
Yeah, it's possible. But just with IMDb, you got to check your shit. Fact check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Well, let's go around and say how we felt about this one. JM, let's start with Blaine. Blaine, what do you think?
I really enjoyed this movie. It was one of those, we talk about Die Hard all the time in this podcast and Holly with the watch on and he shoots the bad guy and that we think it's over and the bad guy grabs her wrist and he needs to get the watch, all that stuff. It's in this movie too. The bad things keep on happening and they keep on ratcheting up the tension and the suspense and the thrills. And it was a really fun movie to watch. It also does take in the locations really well.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
It was a beautiful,
all those mesas and voodoos and stuff.
It was a beautiful movie. It's a beautiful movie to watch. And I think you're right, JM. The bad guy is a great bad guy. Even the henchmen are good henchmen. Like that kid pretending to have a difficulty just because he knew the guy would buy it because he's from the city and he thinks everyone's like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we did. I think it's Jack Noseworthy is the actor. Mm-hmm. And yeah. We didn't talk about that too because he kind of puts on like almost like a Forrest Gump kind of a voice.
He does. Yeah.
And it seems like a stereotype, and then you realize that that was a purposeful choice that that he made as a kidnapper.
Yeah, and I think...
to prey upon those prejudices that the Kurt Russell character would have.
Exactly, and I think you know it's something that I noticed throughout the movie too. Those kind of city folk versus country folk, and the class divide here. Is really touched upon. I don't quite know if the movie pulls off like saying something good about it. It's almost as if the city folk just went out and the country folk are bad kidnapper people.
Well, they are. So, that's just so country people are bad, right? That's agree on that, right?
I don't know if it's saying that necessarily. And, you know, we also find out that those truckers and, like, J.T. Walsh, like, they're not even from there. Like, they he has to drive all night away from where they are to get to his home. So he is also kind of, like, a visitor in that specific location. Yeah. Yes, he lives on a farm. I think that's definitely, like, a big part of the story, but like I think there's something to the fact that they're all kind of like it's sprawling. It's not like the situation where Kurt Russell is like intruding on his territory or something. Like part of the reason why this scam keeps working is because they keep traveling to different places and doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but then the end, I just don't know kind of what it says at the end, because the messaging kind of gets confused because the plot takes over, and I'm thankful that the plot takes over. I like this plot. It's very, very fun, but it didn't have to have that messaging either. Like, it didn't have to say anything about class. It didn't have to have those things in it, but the fact that it does makes this such a more interesting movie and gives us something to really talk about. Sometimes we find on the podcast we're really looking for things to talk about in a movie for time, and this is not one of those. I think we could debate that for a long while and it would be fruitful. So I think there's just a lot to this movie that at first blush I didn't appreciate when I first saw it, and I was delighted that you got to go back and watch it. So I'm gonna say it's totally rewatchable. JM, what about you?
Yeah, I love this movie. I think it's rewatchable. I mean, in terms of what you're saying, I think it's like, yeah, I mean, we could have a conversation about whether, you know, how we paint like people from the country as evil, as, you know, whether or not movies should do that or not. And but I think like this movie and this story and this messaging is specifically about judging people based on their appearances. And
that's a good thing, right?
And it's a good thing. No, but like I was saying before, I think what's interesting about this movie is it's completely a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bad guys see Kurt Russell driving a fancy car and don't realize that he is like a middle class at best guy who's living above his means just because he's decided to, you know, he's going through some kind of crisis of his own, him and his wife, and decided to like buy a fancy car, even though they can't really afford it, and completely uproot their lives because they're going through something. But they see that car and they make a judgment based on that. They think they know who this guy is and they don't. And conversely, Kurt Russell at the same time sees these country folk and thinks they're dumb. He thinks they just eat gas station junk food. He thinks that he will outwit them, or that, you know, they can just offer or take offers of generosity without the usual skepticism you might reserve for a stranger in the city. You know, like, I think... And again, like, we see that with the character who, like, specifically tries to make it seem like he has some kind of intellectual disability, that, you know, he's playing him, Kurt Russell, you know, he's trying to exploit that weakness, and that weakness being him underestimating people that don't live in a city. And so I think that works. I think that... the movie as a whole is just so tense, so suspenseful. There, with this kind of movie where it's like, like I said, like the best part of a lot of these movies is like the mystery, right? It's like his wife's gone. We don't know why. The guy who she was with says he doesn't know who she is. I mean, like in a worse version of this movie, the twist would be like that Kurt Russell is evil and his wife wanted to get away from him and convinced J.T. Walsh to lie for her. Like there are so many routes it could have taken. But and I think that a lot of movies like this come up with a good hook for the trailer where it's like, here's, you know, the central mystery where we don't know what happened to this guy's wife. And when you go see the movie, once the kind of air is let out of that mystery and you know what's going on, the movie kind of peters out to a disappointing finish. But in this movie, somewhat amazingly, once the kind of reveal has been made or you know, the pretense of the mystery is dropped when we have that scene with J.T. Walsh who wants him to go to the bank and get the money, like the movie only gets better. Like it gets more dramatic. It gets more tense. You get more invested and it builds and builds and builds until this climactic release where you just want, you can't even breathe until a truck crushes this man to death. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think this movie is masterpiece too strong a word for a movie directed by the guy who did Terminator 3. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is. I just think it's also just kind of perfect. Like there's not an ounce of fat on the story. Like it's 90 minutes long and you just kind of plow through it and everything feels earned and nothing feels phony. And I knew everything that was going to happen and I was like shaking with nerves watching it. I don't know. I kind of love it. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed. The mystery sort of took me in. The situation, you know, made me very scared for the characters. The action, you know, kept me engaged. I was thrilled like every second of the way. All the performances are pretty great in this movie. I mean, there's not a lot happening, but like it is just like boiled down to its like essential parts. Like we have like a whiff of backstory for these characters, like really just enough to like make us know that they're not in a great situation. And then that's all we get. We don't know anything else about their relationship, you know, except like what they act on screen. And it's really great. Feels like they're strong characters. We want to see Kurt Russell find his wife. They didn't have to like make him into like a total insufferable asshole in order to like get the point of this movie across. Like he's sort of like thick-headed. Like he probably shouldn't have stayed with his car and let his wife go off alone. But I mean, I guess in the end that saved their lives anyway, because they probably would have just killed them both right there. But yeah, it was just, I think I said last week when we were talking about Quick Change, like I really appreciate movies that play with tension and with your expectations. And I do feel like it's a little bit of a lost art, or maybe there's just, you know, maybe I'm not seeing it in the things that I'm watching, but it feels so thrilling in this movie to like see all the pieces move and this bit complicates that bit. And, you know, you really don't know what exactly is going to happen until it does. And it's usually very surprising. So I think this is totally rewatchable. I mean, I think it is sort of close to a masterpiece. I mean, if you talk about a masterpiece as like one particular artist's greatest work, it's definitely John Mostow's masterpiece, because T3, not so great. I think the other movie he did was Surrogates, that Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah, yeah, which is not great.
No.
He did U571 too.
Right. Yeah. Was that any good?
Oh, I think it's okay.
It was okay.
Yeah. But no, I think it is like also like the masterpiece of the genre. Like we talked about trucker movies and also like of these like road movies. And I can't really think of a better one from that era that would do it for me. It does feel like a throwback too. Like it does almost feel like something that would, you know, you'd see in like the 70s, you know, with like truckers and all of that stuff.
Yeah, but there are like Duel or like in the 80s with Road Games. Like, yeah, totally. Maybe it was a 90s thing too, but like the killer truck driver movie.
Not killer truck driver, but did you guys ever see that movie Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone and some little kid? And yeah, he's a truck driver and he does the arm wrestling.
No, that's awesome.
It is awesome. We should do that movie sometime. But yeah, totally rewatchable.
Great.
And that's rewatchability for this week. You can find us on the Apple Podcasts. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on all the other podcast platforms as well. If you'd like to become a Patreon, go to patreon.com/rewatchability. You can order a t-shirt from TeePublic. Anything else?
What's our CB handle?
we're the Rewatchability Rangers.
We need to get a better CB handle.
10-4 on that, good buddy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.